Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Today is the 1st of December and it's absolutely freezing here in Wolverhampton. But we're being very brave and we've come out to do a podcast down the old railway track. So we want to do the next episode in our Lao Tzu series. So as usual, Pete's going to read out the next chapter and then we'll have a chat about it.
It's chapter 14. When you gaze at something but see nothing, when you listen for a sound but cannot hear it, when you try to grasp it and find it has no substance, then these three things that go beyond your mind are moulded together in the one. Its surface doesn't shine, but nor is its base dull. Given this, it is only knowable as no thing. Confront it, it has no head. Come behind it, and it has no tail. If people could follow the ancient way, then they would be masters of the moment. And if you know this way, then you have seen the timeless way of the Tao.
Anyway, so as we were having our walk, we're to hit the head of the railway track that we're walking along now, we were having a bit of what we call a pre-talk about this. And Pete was saying, oh, this is a bit of a tricky one, and I agree. So what do you think he's trying to tell us with this one?
This is Lao Tzu really up against the ineffable, but nevertheless continuing to speak. Even though he's falling into the black hole of paradox in the process. And this is why I said to Anna, oh, this is tricky. What he's referring to is something that I've worked on for a few decades, philosophically. That is, which is just the matter of boundaries. What is a boundary? Where do they come from? Do we make them? And by boundaries, I mean those lines in the flux of things, in the great swirling, ever-changing movement, which is existence, which enclose objects like pebbles and trees and clouds and people and leaves and so on. But also which includes concepts like cause, like effect, like subject, like object, like true, like false, and so on. So boundaries have a conceptual character, but they can also be referring to the world. And they're obviously closely linked in with language as well, particularly language that uses nouns as its one of its primary parts of speech. Now, when I was doing this work on boundaries, I encountered an American logician called Raymond Smullyan. And Smullyan talked about the boundaryless state in which everything's merging into everything else, such that there are no things. And this is a state of consciousness. And it's one with which mystics and yogis and Sufis and Taoist hermits are familiar, and sometimes also artists and psychedelicists or psychonauts, as they like to call themselves.
Psychonauts.
Yeah. Familiar with this boundaryless state. And this is what Lao Tzu is talking about. And he says, when you gaze at something but see nothing, it's not as though you go blind. The world is, in a sense, still there, and the inner world is still there, but the things are no longer things. You should actually have said there, no thing. When you gaze at something but see no thing.
Yeah.
When you listen for a sound but you cannot hear it. See, you cannot hear the sound distinct from all the other sounds, from the great om of all the atoms of the universe singing. When you try and grasp it and find that it has no substance. This is precisely the boundaryless state. This is trees are no longer trees, mountains are no longer mountains, rivers are no longer rivers. And because boundaries in that condition become merely shifting lines in the swirl of things. And this is what he's talking about. And he says, then these three things that go beyond your mind are moulded together in the one. When you can see nothing, when you don't hear a distinct sound, when you can't grasp something, that what's happening there is oneness, that oneness is in the foreground and multiplicity is in the background. But of course, we should remember that oneness and multiplicity are themselves one. That the world is 10,000 things at the same time as it is just one thing. That the boundaries are at once real and unreal. That there are still, in the boundaryless state, there are still lines in the flux of experience, of consciousness. So, as paradoxical as he seems, just with a little attention, we find that he's actually being sort of quite sensible. I mean, as you said, walking over the field, he said, well, this is actually scientific. A leaf is actually a changing thing. It's sucking in oxygen, it's pumping out CO2, it's producing starch, taking in water from the root system of the tree and then sending it out to the atmosphere. So there's this incessant process. And then when it falls from the tree, it goes through the processes of decay and curls up and changes again, and its shape changes, its colour changes, its chemical composition changes, and eventually it returns to the soil.
And this is happening with everything in our world, including yourself. Seemingly
yes.
Unmovable things like everything. Mountains or rocks or something.
Everything.
That's, yes.
Everything.
Something that we maybe not change in our lifetime are still changing.
Yeah.
And we know that now.
Yeah, but we know that scientifically as well as poetically in the current age. And so
it's nice, it's like obvious and logical, isn't it?
And yet when Lao Tzu talks about it, he sounds very paradoxical. As I said earlier, you know, he falls into the black hole of paradox, trying to F the ineffable. And yet somehow we have to attempt it. I think this is the wonderful thing about F-ing the ineffable. The ineffable can't be F'd. It's impossible. But we have to try. and it's somehow productive, and certainly in Lao Tzu's case, it produces this wonderful, inspiring, poetic utterance that gives us an impetus to encounter it ourselves. Lao Tzu goes on to say, its surface doesn't shine, but nor is its base dull. Given this, it is only knowable as no thing. Confront it, it has no head. Come behind it, and it has no tail. And it, by it there, he's referring to the one. And what he's saying is that the one doesn't shine, but neither is it dull. In a sense, it's the one has no characteristics. In having all characteristics, in containing the 10,000 things, it has no characteristics. It's neither shiny nor dull. One simply encounters it as pure being, you might say. Given this, it is only knowable as no thing.
This line has been hyphenated, no hyphen thing.
Yeah, the translator has seen that the one has got no, doesn't really have a thing-like character. And again, this sounds paradoxical. The one has no thing-like character. Paradoxical. Surely the one is a thing. But actually, again, we need to just look a tiny little bit closer. And the black hole of paradox suddenly starts to seem like hypological. Because the one, there is nothing other to the one. The one's got no outside. Whereas everything has an inside and an outside of the boundary that makes it a thing. The boundary, it's the boundary around a leaf that makes a leaf, that entitles us to say leaf. And the act of language, of speaking about things, actually might be the thing that produces the thing, irony, the thing that produces the ability to speak about a leaf, an imposition of boundary on the flux, the unbounded flux, gives us the things that are of utility to us as human beings, and that we need to talk about. We need to talk about leaves. So our psyches impose a boundary around a thing called a leaf, and everything that's inside the boundary is the leaf, and everything that's outside the boundary is not the leaf. But with the one, there is no outside of the one. And it's having an inside and an outside of a boundary that makes a thing a thing. So the one is not a thing. The one has no thing-like characteristics. And he's wanting us to, it's kind of quite cunning why he does this, he's wanting us to avoid the temptation to say, to try and turn it into a thing. Because the minute we turn it into a thing, we will speak blithely about it, as we speak blithely about leaves and pebbles.
And they are diminished.
And in a sense, again, removing the mystery, which...
And the potential.
And the potential as well. So, you can see he's doing a couple of things there. He's being very truthful. His analysis is impeccable. But he's also encouraging us to avoid reifying the one, turning the one into a thing, which will inevitably become a kind of a metaphysical excuse to persecute and to be cruel and all kinds of things. This is what happens with God. You see, God is that which you can't name, you can't say anything about. But of course, every believer almost does exactly the opposite of the injunction and attributes qualities to God. But since God's the supreme, and you're the person that knows what God's qualities are, you can appeal to this God that you imagine that you know to excuse just about any kind of behaviour. You know, so, but Lao Tzu don't want us to go there, from what I can see, by saying that it is only knowable as no-thing. So he's telling us, don't try to know it as a thing. No doubt with one eye on the consequences of metaphysically excused and vouched for megalomania.
And also, you start to stagnate as soon as you become as soon as you start seeing things rather than... Yeah. You yourself stagnate.
Yeah. Well, not only that, not only is this what you said exactly right with regard to the things that we're surrounded with and which we contain, apparently, but especially, as Lao Tzu is saying, especially when we try and turn the one into a thing, into the totality of everything, into a thing. That is very stagnatory as well, because how we avoid stagnation is by moving ever deeper into the mystery of existence, not by taming it with language and stories and narratives and metaphysical theories. This is what causes stagnation. When we have that particular relationship with the mystery of things, as well as with, as you rightly said, the actual universe of things that we move around in our everyday. Anyway, he goes on and he says, if people could follow the ancient way, then they would be masters of the moment. The ancient way is precisely this: allowing the one into the foreground and the 10,000 things into the background, at least some of the time. This is the ancient way. The ancient way is seeing that the boundaries are lines in the flux and not hard, fixed, permanent, unchanging things. The ancient way is not turning the one into a thing in our imaginations and then running into all the horrors that flow out of that for human life. It's the ancient way. And says when we master the ancient way, if we followed this ancient way, we would be masters of the moment. And I suppose this is the living in the moment thing. But of course, we always have to add a caveat with this, that this doesn't mean to say we're creatures without memory or the ability to prognosticate in our ordinary lives. None of this stuff does violence to ordinariness. What it does do is reveal the ordinary as mysterious, as beautiful, as luminous, as dynamic, as sublime. Just this ordinary. And of course, you know, the ancient way is gazing at something and seeing nothing. The ancient way is listening for a sound but not hearing it, because instead we're apprehending the vibration of the totality. And when we try and grasp it, we find it has no substance. That's the ancient way, and it is entering the boundaryless state, which is open to us, and which a smattering of commentators have spoken about at all times and in all places. So yet it is living in the moment, and with great luminosity and ease, but at the same time it's not a denial that we are creatures of memory and creatures of prognostication. And in fact, the boundaries, what does happen in this mastery of the moment, is that the boundaries between past, present and future also start to look a little bit less fixed than they do when we've never encountered any of these states of consciousness. So this is cool. Anyway, the last couple of lines, he says, and if you know this way, then you have seen the timeless way of the Tao. So the way of the Tao is timeless, and this is where I mentioned that consciousness, which is not turning the one into a thing, which is allowing that the flux and flow of the boundaries that we normally take to be somewhat fixed is understood, that is the way of the Tao. And obviously he recommends it because he thinks the Tao is like the best thing since sliced bread in the entire universe. So he wants human beings to follow its way. So he wants us to have what you might say, you know, a unitary consciousness, a mystical consciousness, but not one which is construing that consciousness as being something very, very static and icy and fixed and changeless. He's not Parmenides, he's Heraclitus, if he were a Greek. So this is what he's recommending to us as human individuals. And I think there's a lot to be said for it.
Okay, I hope you found that useful. There's some little sparkling bits in there. And we will be coming to you with the next episode soon.
Thank you for listening.